the NLDS with Mark Carman and Kevin Powell, the creator of the new Netflix show Easy, Joe Swanberg, and live music in Studio 435 from Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. And now here's your host, a man who brought his broom to work, Justin Kaufman.
It's because it's so dusty. You know, I like to do my haircuts and shit. You know, and I gotta sweep up the little hairs. That's why I bought the broom. Not why? Is something else going on? Welcome to the download here in 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a show we have lined up for you on this night in which the Chicago Cubs going to sweep the San Francisco Giants. Got a game out in San Francisco at AT&T Park. Kevin Powell is out there covering it for WGN Radio. We're going to catch up with him a little bit later in the show from the 8 o'clock hour. Wow. You know, it's an amazing night in Chicago, and it's really interesting because we were on the air, what was it, last week, maybe, I guess it was Friday night, and there was all this tension and all of this, like, hand-wringing. We were all worried about what was going to happen, and the Chicago Cubs took care of business in two dramatic like, what I really love about it is they won two different ways. They won in a nail-biter, a close game where they had to show a little bit of mental agility, and Javi Baez comes up in the eighth inning, makes a huge home run. But the kind of stuff we were talking about, that your heroes are made in the playoffs, there he was. And then on Saturday night, we watched just a fun-loving bunch, you know, where Travis Wood is hitting home runs and a Chicago Cubs bullpen that just shut it down. So all the areas that we talked about, whether or not someone was going to step up, whether or not the bullpen could stay intact, it's all worked out for the Cubs in the first two games. They play Game 3 tonight at 8:30 start out in San Francisco against the San Francisco Giants and Madison Bumgarner. How great is that? We got lots to talk about tonight. Tonight is Monday, of course. That means Touche, Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy will be here to pick up the trash from last night's debate. Wow, that was trashy. I don't care who you're for, either side. That is probably the trashiest debate in the history of debates. You have hate in your heart. You're the you call her the devil. I mean, that's good. I was waiting for a swear word. Like, I was waiting for, like, an adjective, you know, to be like, you know, here's a problem with you. You're such a, you know, like that kind of thing. We didn't get it. But, hey, there's still one more debate, so could be coming up. Talk with them coming up here after the 7:30 news. Also tonight, good friend of the show, Joe Swanberg, will be back. He's a creator, a filmmaker, and creator of the show Easy on Netflix. Great show if you haven't seen it. Really great improvised show with a lot of great Chicago actors in it, but also big-time stars like Orlando Bloom, Mark Maron's in it, Hannibal Buress. But the idea really is that Joe Swanberg took his talents as a filmmaker and he brought them to Netflix for a TV show. We'll talk to him about that process, essentially how you go and make a career in film and transition it to television. Joe Swanberg will be my guest tonight at the big table coming up at 9 o'clock. And Miles Nielsen is here, the son of Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. Him and his band, Rusted Hearts, are here. They got an album out this summer. And they'll be playing at Lincoln Hall coming up, so they will perform live in Studio 435. So we got a lot to do tonight, so let's get to it. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back and do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, so Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's get the show on the road. We got a big one tonight. First, let's start with the carryout. This is, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. If you're looking for sticks, poster board, or markers, you know what? All sold out. Why? Because we're on the eve of the 2016 teacher strike. What? No graphic? No sound effect? Nothing? Just going dry here? All right. Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Board of Education are still in negotiations over a contract, but the deadline for a deal is midnight, and most say that ain't gonna happen. So the union has been handing out picket signs and T-shirts all day long and have instructed teachers to show up for work, show up to protest work at 6 a.m.
What does Rahm have to say? Well, he still says it's a choice for the teachers' union, and he's going forward with a budget address tomorrow, City Council. Hopefully, he has enough time to edit out the "we're all working together to make this a great city" line, which is not applicable. Some union supporters have even called on presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton to weigh in on the strike, which would be delicious. With the teachers or you with your old buddy Rahm? The same buddy that was ostracized back at the Democratic convention. This could be good. In the meantime, you better start figuring out what to do with your children. This can't be good for anybody involved. Parents taking off work, employers losing productivity, high school kids at home or worse, meddling in the streets, football teams having to forfeit games. There's no good to a school stoppage. And the worst part? We have to make these days up in June. So it's really not a school stoppage, it's a school postponement. So that means the famed phone-it-in final week of school is going to turn into the final weeks of school. Hope that Frozen DVD doesn't get scratched. Speaking of a scratched DVD, last night's presidential debate was trash. Gutter politics, from the opening press conference to the onstage stalking. What was that? The debate was red meat for Trump supporters with a round of claims and, well, threats that have never been seen before in American debates. Trump threatening Clinton with jail. Trump saying that Clinton was the devil. Trump saying that Clinton had hate in her heart. Hate in her heart, huh? Trump complaining that the debate was unfair when he actually had more time. That fly that wouldn't leave either candidate alone. That plus the 20-plus fact-check lies, and I'm not sure if Trump was debating or doing a rap-off. I knew it from the start. You had hate in your heart. Mic drop, 8 Mile. Right? I think that's how it goes. It was truly an amazing night of train wreck politics. Today, to make it even worse, billionaire Warren Buffett came out and refuted Trump's assertion that Buffett doesn't pay taxes or uses the same loopholes. Buffett released his numbers and says he pays federal taxes and has for 73 years. He says he's being audited and he will give his tax returns. Trump said, yeah, well, ISIS. Listen, I understand the people who are pro-Trump, they don't like this bashing. I get it. But man, oh man, stop being a fish and stop trying to climb into the barrel. Okay? It's terrible. Anyway, Trump now hopes that everyone forgets about Billy Bush and that Hillary Clinton is caught with a sex tape and an ISIS commander, right? That's the only way I see this thing turning around. Well, in weather, nice couple fall days. Supposed to get a low of 45 degrees midweek, though. I blame Obama. In sports, a little bit over an hour, and the Chicago Cubs are going to get down to business to finish off the San Francisco Giants at AT&T Park in the town that gave us Rice-A-Roni and the homeless. Jake Arrieta pitches tonight, which now looks like a brilliant move by Cub manager Joe Maddon. Who wouldn't want Jake Arrieta on the mound in a closeout game? He goes against all-world Madison Bumgarner, who is super lights out in the playoffs. But I will say that for as great as he's been lit up plenty of times during the regular season. I don't think he's as scary as the baseball analysts are saying. Take it from me. I won my fantasy baseball league. So, you know, I mean, I'm not sweating it either. You know, so, no big deal. Cub lineup changes. Hayward takes a seat, along with Wilson Contreras. To face Bumgarner, Zobrist slides to right, and big-hitting Jorge the Flair Soler takes over in left field. And Miggy freeze-frame Montero comes in to catch for the Iceman Arrieta himself, which is probably a good thing, since Arrieta walked like 7 million batters when Contreras was catching him, right? It's kind of a fact. The Giants faithful, you know they'll be out in droves tonight with their Silicon Valley white wine, with their gray ponytails, and their million-dollar one-bedroom apartments. And all those hills. Who has streets that are so steep? Come on, try harder, San Francisco. To start the game, they should have the Rock parachute onto the field like he did in the movie San Andreas. That'd be like the only cool thing they could do, right? Do you smell what the Rock is cooking? And he misses and he just flies into that Trans-American. I don't know. All right. In other sports news, the Bears lost a tough one in Indianapolis yesterday. But I will say that a loss like that, where both teams are trading scores back and forth all game, is much better than the losses we saw earlier in the season. I know it sounds horrible, but this is how you're supposed to lose. Driving late, fourth down pass towards the goal line that doesn't connect? That's okay. It's not okay when you're already 1-3 because now you're 1-4 and it's going to take a lot of energy to get to 500. And I just don't know if I have it in me. After yesterday, I actually said to a friend of mine, I'm tired. I'm tired of being a Bears fan. So sad. So low. And finally tonight, Mayor Emanuel is reportedly going to ask for a surcharge for using plastic or paper bags at the store. Right now, some plastic bags are banned in the city of Chicago, but this would add a charge for you to use any store bags. And there is concern that some stores won't even let you bring in your own bag. So, what does it mean? Well, it means cargo pants are about to come back in style. That's the carryout for October 10, 2016. Tonight, we have a special on chili flakes. Packages of chili flakes used to be free. Now, $10. All right, you can have them for free. No, you know what? No, $10.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy. It's time for Touche. Like I said, man, we're going to take out the trash after last night's debate. Pick it up. I guess that's a better way to say it. Pick up the trash. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right. Rob Martyr, I just read that they're pumping in the Grateful Dead at the Giants game.
No, of course they are. We want everyone to be mellow.
I guess it's when people look around the country and they watch a Cubs game and we're going, go Cubs, go, or sweet home Chicago. It's the same thing. I guess you play Grateful Dead in San Francisco. I don't know.
To the land of the ridiculous statistics, baseball, one of the things that infuriates me about the game is also one of the things that we love about the game, or just the goofy stats that everyone comes up with.
Yeah, right.
You know, Bob, the team with the best regular season record in the National League, where a starting pitcher has a beard through much of the season, has a 62.3% of winning game three. We'll definitely be keeping our eyes on that stat tonight, won't we?
Exactly.
It's like, what?
That's an hour and a half of that. That's MLB Network all afternoon.
That's right. From the Elias Sports Bureau. Anyway.
I love it.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio here on the Dallas 720 WGN. It's time for Touche. This is a segment we've been doing every single Monday for the last, year now?
Year-ish.
As long as the campaign goes, and this is
it feels like 10.
It really does.
No.
But I have to say, it's something where I'm watching a debate last night, and I'm like, you know what? This is great because
this is democracy.
I've developed a good rapport with Chris and Dave, and I want to hear what they want to argue about. All right, so last night, watching the debate, I felt like it was very gutter politics, very trash. Everything was trash. I felt like it had a chance to sort of elevate, and they went down. They sort of burrowed down. Do you guys have the same opinion, or do you feel like this was the gold standard, if you will, for debates in America?
You know, Justin, someday they'll stop talking about we've been waiting for them to stop talking about Lincoln Douglas and start talking about something else. That happened last night. From now on, it's not going to be Lincoln Douglas. It's Trump Clinton. Last night was a national treasure. And what was so enriching to me personally as an ideas guy, as a policy guy, is that they spent so much quality time on policy.
Yeah, right. Chris, what did you think last night?
You know, it's just another bizarre event in this very unusual campaign season. And I don't suppose that it's really that far from what I expected, right? I mean, Trump did not have a press conference Saturday morning to say, this was awful, this was terrible, I should never have done it. I truly
talked to Melania
about it, or, you know, et cetera, whatever. To make, as I use a word, abject apology for it. And I think that would have opened the door to the kind of conversation that Dave is mentioning. But, you know, that's not who he is. And so he took it to the event. David, come on. So he took it to the event, and we all saw the result. Now, having said that, and this I say with some, you know, sadness. I mean, it was terrific theater But it was at the expense of, you know, the kind of debate that Dave's talking about. And
well, Chris, on Touche, we've been talking about this. You say the only way that Donald Trump has a chance in this election is if he makes it about Hillary Clinton. If he says, I'm going after Hillary Clinton, she is not fit to run for office. He did last night. He went at her constantly. Did he do it in the right way? I mean, did he do it in a way that is going to resonate with an undecided voter saying, yeah, I think she might be wrong? Or as many pundits say, does just sort of step over the line and now we're in Trashville?
Well, the polls are going to tell. I mean, my sense is that he was a little bit out there. Okay. But I think that Hillary deserves to be held accountable for her inconsistencies and her hypocrisies and for her failures. As does, you know, Trump. You find an inconsistency, hypocrisy, or failure, go ahead and hold him accountable for it. I'm not so afraid of that, and I don't think that was a low point. I think that he is not conventional enough to sort of restrain the urge to say, yeah, you will be in jail. I mean, you can't hear that without a twinge. I mean, there's a certain part of me, yeah, finally somebody's standing up to Clinton. On the other hand, that's right. We're talking about President of the United States.
Two things struck me. Number one, when you take the CEO of Breitbart, you add in the CEO of Citizens United, you add in a woman who was the key Tea Party pollster, and you add them in with a guy who has nothing to lose and who has no shame whatsoever, you get yesterday, and I'm not just talking about the debate last night, but of course
the press conference beforehand,
that astonishing show that happened 2 hours before that left journalists and normal people around the country with their mouth agape going like, okay, look, if you want to make this an issue, fine. But doing this 2 hours before a debate in which you're supposed to be contrite and apologize for hang on, let me finish. You're supposed to be contrite, which all the consultants said, you got to be contrite because effectively what Donald Trump said is he said, I commit sexual assault on a regular basis, and sexual assault, according to the Justice Department and according to state laws around the country, is an unwanted sexual advance and touching of a woman. And he admitted he did it. And there are women all over this country who are going to come out of the woodwork to prove that what he said last night when he said, oh, I never did anything, I just talked about it, he's a liar.
OK, well, Hillary is a liar, and Hillary lied in front of the entire.
She hasn't committed sexual assault.
Hillary abetted and aided.
She has not committed sexual assault.
Well, she abetted and she aided somebody who was committing sexual assault.
What, did she unzip his pants, Chris? You cannot hold a woman responsible for her husband's infidelity.
I'm not. I'm holding her responsible for her aiding and her abetting her prurient husband, okay? That is what I'm holding. And that's the only thing that Trump did. And every attempt.
Excuse me?
That's the only thing that Trump was holding her accountable for. And that is, and she is to be held accountable for that. When she laughs, and every time you hear that video or you hear that audio from her laughing about
did hear it, and it's debunked in the way that
it is
she's,
not debunked.
It's
it
repeatedly debunked.
It's
is
debunked,
absolutely
I've gone
not
deep
debunked.
On the rabbit hole on this. She's laughing at the concept, and I don't want to go down the.
You
we don't have enough time.
Absolutely misrepresenting that, and I want to tell
I'm
you,
not.
I believe that what he did with that press conference was brilliant.
Do you
was
actually
absolutely
suggest brilliant?
Absolutely yeah. Brilliant. And I thought bringing them to the event was brilliant. And I think sometime these people have to be held accountable for what they have done.
Why was it brilliant from a
for
political
what I just said.
No, from a political
because
strategy perspective.
Because it held them accountable.
That is not political
I'm
strategy,
sorry.
Chris. That
the
is
political
vindictiveness.
Strategy. No, the political
that
strategy.
That is anger management.
No, you would say it's not anger management. And so you got yourself wrong on that one. But what it was telling people in this country there is a line. And all of us are on this side of the line, and the Clintons are on that side.
And the person who's telling you that admitted 2 days earlier on videotape that he commits regular sexual assault.
So you say that's
no,
not
I don't
what
say.
Happened.
No, that's what he said.
David, that's not what
Chris,
he said.
Chris, everybody who's listening to us
that's
in this audience
what he
heard what he said.
I'm sorry, you're wrong.
He said, I put Tic Tacs in my mouth, and then I go kiss women because I can, because I have star power. It's exactly what he said.
Well,
why are you denying the obvious?
It's not what he said. He didn't say I committed sexual assault, and there are a lot more elements to that than you are reporting in this
There are not.
In this partisan retelling of history.
All right, Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. It's Touche.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right. It's Touche here. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling. We argue about, I don't even know what we're arguing about.
There is a falsehood.
Chris is relitigating the 90s.
There is a falsehood being perpetrated that there were no issues brought up last night. I contend the opposite. I think that Trump was the font of issues, and I think that Hillary was hiding from the issues.
You're right. Trump was the font of issues where he lied over and over and over again. Oh, how about ISIS, let's say? He said that Russia and Iran and Syria have all been bombing ISIS, when we all know that Russia and Syria have all been bombing the opponents of the Assad regime, including all the people that we are funding and supporting in Syria. It was a lie. It was a fabrication, and it's a lie.
So when Hillary Clinton says...
Watch, by the way, for Chris not to respond to the actual question I just raised.
When Hillary Clinton says, I did not destroy the emails the congressional subpoena.
Deflection.
What is that telling the truth?
Well, Hillary did not.
Deflection. Hillary lied about the emails because she cannot face the truth.
Chris,
I
keep
concede
deflecting.
That he got that wrong.
You keep deflecting.
I just conceded he got that
wrong.
How
about, thank you. We've made progress.
I heard that at the time. But I'm getting back to the emails.
You
I'm getting back
in.
To
like
Obamacare.
That.
I'm
okay.
getting back to, in my opinion,
okay, and what
there
was
were more
Trump's
issues.
Solution?
He brought up two of his solutions. He brought up two of the seven solutions that are on the website. He said he talked about, I think, HSAs, health savings accounts, and he talked about repealing.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, he talked about repealing the thing. He talked about replacing the thing. He talked about
with nothing.
No, he
with
talked
nothing.
About,
hold on.
If
hold
you
on.
Look, have you looked at the website? He talked about the health savings accounts, and he had one other element that he brought up out of his seven that are on the website.
Yes, out of the 9,000 words that Trump has put on policy on the website, as opposed to 120,000 that Hillary's put on policy, Donald Trump has memorized about 20 of them.
What is it that
let me
Hillary
ask you,
has
no,
accomplished
let me
in
ask
30
the
years
question.
In Washington?
Deflection again. Thank you.
No, but I mean, that's a question that I think that kept coming up over and over and over, is about whether or not Hillary Clinton was responsible for some of the things. I thought that was a little bit hyperbole, or a little bit sort of wide net when you're talking about whether or not she could change things as a senator. And she even mentioned at one point there's a Republican president. I mean, talk about, like, when we talk about facts and lies and distortions, there seems to be a lot of that. How can we change that as the American people, like, to not have that be part of this structure, this debate structure?
Well, first of all, we can start acknowledging that facts matter. And not ignoring them. Well, 88% of Trump voters believe that all fact checkers are simply partisan machines, that they're functionally the
I
Trump
believe that
voters.
As well.
The Trump voters believe there
you
are
do?
No facts.
I absolutely believe that the fact checkers that are referred to in the mainstream media are overwhelmingly liberal Democrat oriented.
And do they and cite they facts?
And they don't cite facts. And
okay.
There are any number of any. You go to anyone, PolitiFact, or go to any one of the so-called fact checkers, and within 50 or 75 words, you're going to find an opinion that is masquerading as a fact. I think that David distrusts the people of America to evaluate these arguments on their own. I don't. Hillary is afraid of admitting that she got a subpoena from the United States Congress and she then destroyed 33,000 emails. Hillary is sitting atop an organization in which not one, not two, but five key individuals took criminal immunity.
Chris, would you
now,
accept
why
it?
Does she take criminal immunity if they didn't do anything wrong?
Would you accept at all, like, if somebody came out, as they did on PBS, I was watching afterwards, a woman came on and said, that's not entirely true. She was subpoenaed after she deleted the email.
No, that's
would you
not
accept
true.
It? Would you accept it if that
came
out?
The actual date
why,
on
why
the
why are
subpoena?
They saying that? When she says in January she did the order for deletion and didn't get it till 3 months later, the actual
I'm
subpoena.
Sorry, the subpoena, that's not, the subpoena issues on March 5, it's received. It's signed for, so it is the service
right,
legal
sure.
service has been achieved, and they're deleted 15 days later.
Chris, the U.S.
35,000 emails, and even if you have an innocent explanation that they weren't covering up Clinton Foundation influence at the State Department, you still have to deal with the Public Records Act. The fact that she's destroying things that are potentially
the FBI,
and she's the FBI is suborn. No, oh, that has no validity. And it
no
has,
validity. There, Comey,
it has no
Comey
validity.
Who you used to praise as a paragon
Comey
of
has
honesty
turned out
and integrity,
to be a total toady.
Oh, turned out to be a
he
toady
a
because
toady.
He didn't do what you wanted.
No.
Because he didn't do what your candidate wanted. When your candidate last night said that if he were in charge of the Justice Department, he would make sure Hillary was thrown in jail.
He didn't.
He said exactly that.
He violated.
If you were in charge of Illinois or of U.S. laws, you would have been in jail, Hillary. That's what tin pot dictators do.
He violated all of the mechanisms and the procedures for FBI investigations, and he built himself up to this Hillary so-called interview where they had 12 people. And they weren't even following any of the basic FBI principles of how to conduct an interview. This is a sham investigation,
and
David. It's not worthy of the name.
Oh, please.
And that's why nobody has any confidence in it. And that's why people are convinced that
Chris,
there are
it's
two
why
levels
people on your side of the aisle
of justice
who
in
have
this
been
country.
Trying to get Hillary Clinton for 25 years don't have confidence in it.
Well,
because
you
were determined
to destroy 35,000 government
emails.
You and
I had the same argument. Months ago, and you said, no, she will be indicted. She will be indicted. She will be indicted. The FBI, Comey, will do the right thing. And when he didn't do what you wanted him to, suddenly he's a hack.
30,000 emails
same
destroyed.
Guy.
Okay. And the fact last is, she's avoiding it.
All right. Last thoughts here.
Last thoughts.
I love
are that,
it. You guys are all riled
oh, we're
up.
Fired up and ready to go,
I like
go,
it.
Baby.
Keep it going. Keep
the
it going.
The last thought is that what happened on Friday with Donald Trump and the tapes, his admitting sexual assault, people like Chris may not think it's a big deal, but the women of America thinks it's a huge, huge deal. And what has happened in that, and today's the first poll that came out since that happened, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll found that Hillary's lead has doubled to 14 points in a head-to-head matchup, 11 points in a four-way.
Final thoughts here, Chris.
Well, I think that David is right. I mean, I think that the tape is devastating to Trump. And I think that you saw that over the weekend and how the Republicans were reacting to that. And I think you saw that in a variety of advice he was getting about what to do with it. And he decided to take it to the debate and to do the debate the way that he did. And it might work out for him. It might not work out for him. That's up to the people who are watching at home. I think there are much bigger issues than what Trump said 11 years ago when he was in some kind of Access Hollywood bus talking to some guy. He sounded like an idiot. And
it's
he shouldn't
his character.
Have said what he said.
It's his character. Character matters.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, Touche. We'll be back here. You know, I think, is it next week we start?
I don't know.
There's a Blackhawks game coming up, so we'll switch them
but
up.
But you can't lie as much as Hillary and claim to be on the side of character.
Justin, are you lying,
I feel
or is
like
there a Blackhawks
game right now?
We're going to keep discussing this.
Please, you're over your time, Chris. You're over your time, Chris. Dave, you're over your time.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, Touche.
Oh, man. That was fun.
The boys were fired up tonight.
They were. I don't even know what to do sometimes. Like, and you know, it's probably the same problems I have with politics in general is I just feel over time we'll get on one issue, like in this case it was the emails, and then they just kill the whole 5 minutes of just going over the same issue that at the end of the day, yes, not unlike the Trump tapes and the Hillary Clinton emails, just send a message on character, but we never really get to get at what the issues are that our country has to face.
So Chris Wallace is the moderator of the third and final debate, correct?
Yeah, is he?
So what he should do is just come out and say, look, Donald Trump, there are a lot of people that don't like you. Hillary Clinton, there are a lot of people that don't like you. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, here is what we're going to do.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about the there's something about the debate format and everything about that the sort of stopping the 2 minutes and it just lends itself to personal and character attacks over and over.
Did
and
we
over.
Talk about it, Justin, with you, or did I hear it somewhere else? I like the idea of a chess clock.
Yeah, right.
And everybody gets, each candidate gets 45 total minutes. That's it.
That's it.
And then once you start talking, you punch it. And then once you stop talking, you punch it again. And whatever you're left with is what you're left with.
Oh, I love
it. So you can talk for 10 minutes straight, but then that comes off your 45 total minutes.
I love it.
We should try that.
I love that. I love that. That adds a little sport to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm into that.
And Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. It's time for True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for a little pregame. Game 3 of the NLDS in San Francisco. Mark Carmen in studio, WGN Radio Sports. Cubs up 2-0. You think they got it in them to sweep them tonight?
You know what, Justin? It's amazing when the anxiety rolls in. Like, right there hearing that tune, I just, like, got this swell of fear all over me. Because, you know, Madison Bumgarner, the 27-year-old lefty with the absurd postseason dominance on the mound tonight. So this is a... outside of just winning and advancing, this is a huge statement game in a whole Cubby kind of way. Yeah, you know, we go out and we sweep you. We don't extend series anymore. We beat your best. This is the whole quote-unquote new Cub. We're not going to kill our fans by dragging this out to a Game 5 and have everybody biting off their thumbs on a Thursday night at Wrigley Field.
Let's talk about the pitching matchups. Of course, you just mentioned Madison Bumgarner. The Cubs throw Jake Arrieta, the reigning Cy Young champion, who, I mean, if you look at it now, I mean, it was a little bit perplexing. We talked about it a little bit about Jake Arrieta being a Game 3 starter, maybe not being in the first two games at Wrigley. But now it looks to be a great move by Madden to be able to put Arrieta on the mound in a crucial game.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, bottom line, John Lester deserved to start Game 1, and Kyle Hendricks deserved to start Game 2. And Jake Arrieta is Jake Arrieta. The Giants are batting 200 against Jake Arrieta, which is less than the Cubs are batting against Madison Bumgarner. Not by much, but it is less, 211 to 200. And they don't hit for power against him, 486 OPS. There's only one Giant that hits well against Arrieta, and that's Angel Pagan, the former Cub, who's 5-for-11. So there's reason to be confident here. Now, the Bumgarner beat Arrieta 3-2 earlier this year, and Arrieta didn't have his great stuff that day. But there's not a lot of Giants that have had a lot of success against
Arrieta. I've noticed this, and we talked about this. Pete and I talked about this off-air. Jake Arrieta, not one that has a sort of go-to catcher. But if there was going to be one, last year's Miguel Montero, who caught him for most of the second half of the season, is the guy. He struggled a little bit with Wilson Contreras, the rookie. Walked a lot of guys in the middle of the year. Gave up some big games while they were trying to work the rookie out. This is sort of a safe bet to have Miggy in the lineup tonight.
Yeah, I think it's the right move, and it's an odd move. I mean, the Cubs are the first team to start three different catchers in the postseason since the Diamondbacks in 2002. I know you remember the Chad Mueller, Damian Miller, Rod Barajas treatment threesome that went in 0-2. But it's true, like, the Cubs' biggest struggles this year, and I love Wilson Contreras. I think he's a stud, and if I was making a deal with the Cubs and another team and I was giving up pitching, I would say, you're giving me that guy. But when he did first come up, that's when their season was on the slide. And Arrieta, for whatever reason, has some comfortability with Montero. And Montero's been hitting better as of late, too. So I think it makes sense on a lot of levels.
Okay, so let's talk about the Cubs and their need to jump out on Madison Bumgarner. Now, Bumgarner's had a tremendous postseason, not just this year, but the years before. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball history when it comes to postseason success, but not as dominant as he has been in the regular season. Madison Bumgarner is not like a Clayton Kershaw, where every time he comes out, it's lights out.
Right, but he's never lost an elimination game, right? And he's also tied with Tom Glavin for the most postseason starts without allowing a run. But you're right. I mean, there was times in the season this year where he wasn't, quote-unquote, the mad bum that he's been in the playoffs. You're not going to be able to get him out of there by waiting him out and hoping he's going to throw a ton of pitches. Although in his last start against the Mets in the wildcard game, he did throw 119, which is the most he's thrown all year. Perhaps a good sign. I don't know. I was reading today about, like, how come this guy is so tough? Because when you watch him, it's not like he's throwing Rollins Chapman 102, and it's not like his curveball is some nasty. But I guess a lot of people talk about the plane. Like, he throws this, his arm is so sidearm that it's just so different from what batters see. I think, you read guys that have hit him. It's all about, you're going to get that one or two pitches, and you just have to hit them. So,
well, the Cubs counter. I mean, Madden goes with Jorge Soler tonight, right? The big right-handed bat we didn't see in the first two games of the series. So, I mean, obviously he's in the game for matchups and the idea of maybe jumping on a Madison Bumgarner pitch early.
Yeah, and you go back to last year. I mean, Jorge Soler in the playoffs was ridiculous. I mean, he started out his playoff career, Jorge Soler, he just wouldn't make an out, right? I mean, it was walk, walk, homer, walk. I mean, it was incredible. But he has never had a hit against Madison Bumgarner. But it makes sense to have a righty
hitter.
In
yeah. Mark Carmen, Justin Kaufman here. True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust Home of Cubs checking. This is a good stat for you, Mark Carmen. The Giants actually scratch Angel Pagan tonight.
Really?
With back spasms.
Wow.
So there you go. It continues to look positive for Jake Arrieta. The one guy who has been able to touch Arrieta is not playing tonight in San Francisco. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to go to Kevin Powell, who's at AT&T Park in San Francisco, get an update on tonight's game before it starts a little after 8:30. You're listening to True Blue Playoff Plus here on WGN. Stay with us.
We don't suck anymore like we used to do. Finally, we found the ones we've been looking for. Rizzo, Bryant, Zobrist, and Lackey. It's been over 100.
I love these songs. Pete Zimmerman going deep to find some soulful R&B. To celebrate the Chicago Cubs, who are getting ready for Game 3 in the NLDS. Mark Carmen in studio with me as we break down tonight's game, as we get ready for tonight's game in San Francisco. Let's bring in Kevin Powell, WGN Radio Sports, who is at AT&T Park in San Francisco. Kevin, what's the mood like as the game gets ready to start out there?
There's some excitement. I ran into a few Cubs fans before the game. They were sort of flocking down the right field line trying to get autographs and photos while the Cubs were stretching and warming up. So there's no shortage of Cubs fans here, but definitely I would say like 8-1 Giants fans. Not too surprising to be out here in San Francisco. Interesting enough, guys, I know this is what you're most looking forward to hearing is the food I consumed. And I was actually walking the concourse, and they sell Chicago dogs here.
Ooh.
And I sort of laughed at myself and went to the line and watched some Giants fans order up Chicago dogs. I don't know if that's a bad omen for them or what.
Let me ask you about the game. I mean, you've been there since the weekend. Talk about the Cubs' routine getting ready for this game. I mean, are they comfortable? They feel like they're in place. I mean, they took batting practice today. Talk about how the team is, their cool, their collective approach to tonight's game.
Yeah, they all seem cool and collected. I mean, it's just typical Cubs. Joe Maddon talked about it, that they weren't going to change anything from when they're showing up to the stadiums, when they're taking batting practice, who's taking batting practice, things like that. So for them, they sort of said all the stereotypical things, but I believe them that they are just taking this one game at a time and they're not changing the approach at all. I mean, the thing with the Cubs, too, is their motto has been embrace the target. So in their mind, that's sort of how they approached every game all season, was as a favorite, as they should have. So when they come into a post-game setting, it's like, well, is anything really all that different? So the main goal since spring training has been to win the World Series. So I don't know how much it really affects them at all.
Kevin, I believe Jason Hayward spoke yesterday. You were there for that. He's not in the lineup tonight. And I've read some comments where he says, you know, whatever it takes, he's obviously not going to have a negative attitude about it. Anybody around there seeming slightly surprised that Hayward's not playing?
No, I didn't get that. It's not too surprising. I mean, lefty bat against Bumgarner, you get him out. Hayward hasn't been able to hit all year. Solaire, you guys were talking about earlier, what did he hit last year? Like 500 in the playoffs, something crazy like that with a few home runs. So to get him in there, and Joe Maddon talked about building the lineup for tonight and sort of anticipating a pitcher's game, meaning defense is at a premium. So I guess that was sort of playing into it a little bit. I don't know. Hayward's a good fielder right anyways, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some changes made midway through the game, whether it's LaStella or whoever, it's sort of rotating. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Hayward later on in the game either.
Yeah, I would think that Hayward would be out there, certainly, obviously, if the Cubs are able to get a lead. Jorge Soler, I couldn't find this in our last seven. This was his first 9 career postseason at-bats. Walk, double, home run, walk, 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 single, homer. Didn't make an out in his first 9.
It's amazing.
So, I don't know. That would, you
that's
know,
really good, guys. That classifies as good.
Yeah.
Did the team talk at all about their approach to Madison Bumgarner? Obviously, we know him to be such a stud when it comes to the postseason. Is the team talking about how hard it is to face a guy like Bum?
Well, both managers said they wouldn't mind if their players are a little bit more selective, just trying to get base runners on any way they can. I think that can be said almost more for the Giants, because if you know, Jake when Jake Arrieta is on, I've sort of said this all year, even in his second half struggles, when Jake Arrieta is on and he's pitching his best and he has his command down, he's the best pitcher on the team. The problem has been command throughout the second half and really since that crazy streak he had going for like a full calendar year. So to me, if the Giants can get to Arrieta early, take some pitches, get some runners on base, I think they can win this game, especially with Bumgarner mound. But both managers stress being selective, which, again, isn't anything new for the Cubs, considering this sort of quality of bats they've been putting together all season.
Kevin Powell is at AT&T Park. He'll be covering the game tonight for WGN Radio Sports at the park. Do you feel like the Cubs have it in them to take this game tonight and finish the series right now?
If they do, it's all Jake Arrieta. I mean, what Jake Arrieta are you going to get? Are you going to get his last outing, which I know is sort of a weird spring training atmosphere, and he didn't really like it. But still, I mean, if Jake Arrieta is on, they absolutely can win this game. We could see something like game one between Lester and Cueto, something crazy like that, because these are two of the most fierce competitors in baseball, and when they're both on, they're next to impossible to hit. So to me, if it's Jake Arrieta's pitching well, they absolutely can win this game. If he's not, it's going to be a heck of a lot harder, especially on the road. And it just seems crazy to me to think the Giants aren't going to get at least one, considering their experience in the postseason, considering they're at home, considering Madison Bumgarner is back on the mound here. So it's on Jake Arrieta, in my opinion.
If you do get another day in San Francisco, go to the Park Store for breakfast. It's phenomenal. You will not have a better start to your day than a little Park Store on Hayden Asbury. Take that from At the Carm.
I love it. Thank you, Carm. I appreciate it. I tried a San Francisco dog tonight. Do you know what a San Francisco dog is?
I do not.
It's your classic Frankfurter topped with a little sauerkraut, a little Swiss cheese, and a little like Thousand Island dressing.
Ugh.
Yeah, how's that taste?
It was pretty good.
It's pretty good? All right, there you go.
All right,
Kev. We're gonna be
live blogging, right? WGNRadio.com, all that good stuff.
There you go. I think so. WGNRadio.com. Kevin Powell out
I'll
in San
there.
Francisco at AT&T Park. Kevin, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, fellas. Talk to you later.
All right, so there you go. I mean, there you have it. That the as the Chicago Cubs look at this game, we talked about this before, but you know, talk about who has to step up. You heard Kevin talk about Jake Arrieta, but on the offense, who do you think is due for a game that we haven't seen yet?
Well,
in the postseason?
You know who's really due is Anthony Rizzo. He hasn't had a hit in the postseason yet. He did not have a great postseason last year. 6-for-39 now combined. So we're talking about just over a buck. I mean, it's not Anthony Rizzo like. And apparently, you know, when you talk to people around the team, they think that Rizzo has been expanding his strike zone, trying to do too much. All that's going on. So, not exactly the easiest guy to turn it around against.
Yeah, right.
You know, lefty on lefty and Madison Bumgarner. But that's one guy that the Cubs obviously would love to see get going. And when Rizzo is on, I mean, he's one of the toughest outs in all of baseball, right?
Okay, let me ask you this. I mean, we talked about sort of the bullpen on Friday on Game 1, before Game 1, just about whether or not they play out. And we saw them use extended time on Saturday. Does that play any into anything? I mean, you get day off, you get to fly to, you get a little bit of time off, but does that worry you as a Cubs fan that all the bullpen was used like that?
See, I actually think it's huge. You want those guys to get their feet wet in the postseason, and they all were able to come in when the Cubs had a lead at home, and they all pitched well. So you would think that would give them some confidence going in. And the other thing about the Cubs bullpen, Justin, is that the Giants have not scored against the Cubs bullpen all season long. That's 32 and a third innings,
wow.
110 batting average, 33 strikeouts, 5 walks. I mean, that's some domination right there. That's per stats LLC, I should give credit. But, I mean, think about that. You got to feel comfortable if you're Joe Maddon. Hey, they haven't even touched our bullpen. We're 9 games in. The Cubs were 4-3 in the regular season, 2-0 in the playoffs. So that's in 32 innings of work. That's impressive.
It's hard to find any part of what the Cubs have done in the first two games to poke holes in to talk about, to be worried about. I mean,
right.
it's amazing watching that game Saturday, even sort of, you know, losing your starting pitcher to a line drive. And is there any update on Kyle Hendricks? I mean, they pretty much just said he's fine.
Yeah, from what I understand, status quo, you got to get him back on the mound and see how he looks in a side session. But they're saying that he's going to be fine. And, I mean, right when he got hurt, my thought process was, well, I think they can survive it and still win. I mean, that's how much depth they have, right?
It's amazing.
Right. I mean, I think they could. If Arrieta's fine and Lackey's a big game pitcher, you still have three. It's not like you're going from 2-1. You're going from 4-3. They could survive it, but it sounds like he's going to be okay.
On the other side of the ball, we're seeing the Nationals take a 2-1 lead on the Dodgers. Who would you rather see in a second-round matchup, just seeing if the Cubs beat the Giants tonight? Who would you rather see, the Nationals or the Dodgers?
Well, the Dodgers are so left-handed-oriented that I almost think it plays better to go up against Washington. And the Cubs, they've had great games with both teams. So, and you've got the Dusty Baker factor with the Nationals, so that makes it more fun. So I think that it's also less travel. You know, you don't have to go out to the West Coast and all that. So, I mean, not that it's a huge deal. They're both traveling, but you know, we're planning for the World Series here, and to add on those extra miles, not necessary. So let's dial up Dusty and the Nats, and we'll deal with Max Scherzer and company.
There you go. Well, we'll take care of the San Francisco Giants first. Mark Carmen, are you on for the postgame?
Yes, it's myself, Adam Hogue, and Andy Mazur. We're actually going to start at 11 tonight, Patty taking the night off, so it's going to be us until 2 in the morning tonight, sitting in for Patty. We'll do, obviously, you'll be all Cub all the time and hopefully talking about a win.
All right. Well, it's True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. Mark Carmen, you check him in after the game tonight, postgame here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Mark. Chicago Bears Blue. This year we're not going to lose. Chicago Bears Blue. This year we're not going to lose. This year we're not going to lose because we're tired of these Chicago It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, as the Cubs start Game 3, we move on. We'll come back to the postgame coming up a little bit later with Adam Hogue and Mark Carmen. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Joe Swanberg's going to join us. He's the director, creator of Easy, the show on Netflix. He's getting great reviews. Obviously, a filmmaker, Joe Swanberg, drinking buddies, digging for fire, happy Christmas. And he has turned his attention to television. He'll be in studio to talk about the program, talk about that transition that's coming up, and also Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts will be in studio 435 a little bit later tonight. Well, yesterday the Chicago Bears dropped to 1-4 with a loss to the Indianapolis Colts in a shootout. That's what it felt like. It actually felt, and I guess the question that I want to ask Doug Plank, who joins us now, is there such thing as an acceptable loss? Because I feel like in the NFL, this is the kind of loss that we've always wanted. The stumbling, bumbling, interception, fumble, Jay Cutler pout loss that we've seen so many times in Chicago. That's a different story. Yesterday, the team played admirable. They had the ball. They had a chance to win the game in the last couple plays and couldn't get it done. Doug, is there such a thing as an acceptable loss?
No, but you know, when you're 1-4, I think there is, because you have more losses than you have wins. So you have to find some happiness or some positive things in the loss. And for anybody watching that game, I was encouraged. I mean, you know, early in the game, they were very smart. They were throwing short, very manageable throws. I thought their running backs did extremely well. And, you know, their defense was playing very hard. And truthfully, I mean, they had the lead several times in this game. And it was not beyond doubt that, you know, most Chicago Bear fans thought they were going to win this game. And I was the same. But, you know, when the kicker came out, Vinatieri, and was just consistent on those extremely long field goals.
That's crazy.
And the turnover had a huge impact on the game.
Well, let's talk about the positives, and then we'll get into the negatives. But the positives, let's start right at the quarterback position. Brian Hoyer played pretty well. I mean, throwing for just shy of 400 yards. The Bears put up 500-plus yards in total offense, something that's unheard of in these parts. Talk about Brian Hoyer's play.
I was so impressed with him. I think he was making the right decisions. You could tell that he was reading defenses for the most part. I mean, he was making great throws right on money. I thought that they were giving him offensive plays, too, that did not really challenge him in terms of throwing the ball down the field between two defenders. I mean, they were giving him very makeable throws. And I think the fact that he just completed 33 out of 43 for a 77% completion percentage, that's unheard of. So, I mean, yes, I mean, just watching the game up until really the very end, I thought the Bears were going to win that game.
Yeah, and you know, as a fan, I mean, I'm standing and rooting for the team down to the last minute of the game. That's a good thing, especially when the Bears have the ball.
Yes.
They couldn't get it done. Yes. Obviously, like you said, the turnover, Cameron Meredith with a big fumble when the Bears. But even beyond that, again, that was after a catch. I mean, they were actually moving the ball. It didn't feel like it felt in the first couple weeks where the Bears seemed to be out of sorts. They were in sync.
Oh, they definitely were in sync. And, you know, and I know Meredith, that fumble really, you know, was just a striking blow to the game, you know, because if you have just one turnover more than the other team, you're winning somewhere around 90% of the games. So it goes to show you how critical turnovers are. And even though the Bears didn't turn the ball over a lot, you know, that one right there, I think, was really a big blow, because it's psychological also, Justin. You know, when you have a turnover on the game, you know, many times the teams don't take advantage of it and don't score. But just the fact that you take the ball away or you create a fumble or an interception mm-hmm. from the other team, gosh, it's such a psychological effect on the team. And you could see it. You could see they showed, you know, the Bears on the sideline, and you could tell that they were definitely fired up.
Okay, so let's talk about the other offensive. We got a big game out of Cameron Meredith, who was subbing in for Kevin White. But again, all eyes are on the rookie running back, Jordan Howard, who put up 100-plus once again on the ground. This kid looks like the real deal. 2 weeks, people. I mean, for a rookie who's played now who has 2 weeks full of tape, I mean, are teams going to start focusing on him? Are we going to see a different Jordan Howard, or is this the real deal? Can we expect this kind of production from this kid going forward?
Really, I think, you know, his performance just spoke for itself. I mean, he was the right man for the right time. I mean, you know, what, he have over 100 yards, and I think he only carried the ball for 16 times, mm-hmm. Again, for over a 7-yard average. And that's what makes it so incredible, Justin. You go down and look at every one of these statistics, and you're going, oh, my God, they should have won this game. You know, he even caught 3 passes, I think, for around 50 yards. And, you know, he just did an incredible job. And I really, I was inspired, and I was hoping that they were able to pull this thing off, and I know it didn't happen. And, you know, you have to take into consideration, too, now, you know, they did play the Colts, and they don't have necessarily the best defense. You know, sometimes I didn't see really a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. you know, from them, you know, as far as Hoyer was concerned. So he did have some time back there to look around, try to make an attempt, read the coverage. But, you know, you got two teams like right now, I just think, you know, in the Bears division with Minnesota and the way Green Bay's playing, wow, it's going to be tough later on.
Talking with Doug Plank. Doug Plank, of course, good old number 46, the great Chicago Bears safety. We're talking about yesterday's loss, the Chicago Bears to the Indianapolis Colts. Doug joins us every Monday here on the Download. All right, so let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. I mean, there's some playmakers that seem to be emerging. Bryce Callahan, the corner. It seemed like he got some play from the linebacker crew, Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman. But not much of – I mean, they ended up getting 4 or 5 sacks, which is good, but it seemed like the Colts were able to move the ball at will. I think in the first half it was field goal, touchdown, field goal. But the one thing about the Bears' defense is it was a bend, not break. They let Adam Vinatieri on the field more than the wide receivers scoring touchdowns.
And you know what? Honestly, I expected him a couple of those long field goals not to make it. I mean, Vinatieri, I didn't realize just, you know, how good he was. I mean, I know he made 5 straight field goals in that game, but I was not aware of the streak he had going, you know, as far as consecutive field goals. And really, I don't want to say that the game comes down to that, but, you know, I think when they went out there and they knew he was kicking, it was automatic. You know, on the flip side, you know, the Bears weren't quite as lucky. You know, I know that opened up the door, the question about, you know, what happened to Robbie Gould, why wasn't he kept, all these other sort of things. You know, it doesn't take long for a kicker to get criticism,
yeah, right.
Especially in a tight game like this. You know, who knows, where you kick a field goal, you know, the team feels a little bit better about themselves instead of just coming off the field, not getting any points out of a drive. I mean, that means a lot. I mean, this game is really psychological as much as it is physical, because it's about how the players feel, you know, where they are in the game. And, you know, I just think that, you know, there was some doubt that was created, you know, after I think what he missed 2 in a row.
Yeah, that's terrible.
You know, that was pretty devastating on that series.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, that was the one thing you take away, and you're just like, well, the kicking game, special teams of the Chicago Bears, not so great. I mean, for to make such a late preseason move to get rid of Robbie Gould, which seemed to be a cost-cutting move, but you could, I guess you could point to a sort of mediocre season the year before.
Yes.
To replace him with Connor yep. Barth, who everyone says this is a professional, for him to psychologically blunder like he did, where two field goals in a row. They gave him a gift. I mean, they ran into the kicker, whatever it was. They gave him redo.
Really?
And he missed it. That was terrible. That was a big momentum swing for the Bears. And I really enjoyed that that the Bears offense shrugged it off and continued to roll.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's, you know, that was one. I mean, both of those were long kicks. I'm not going to take anything away. What was one 54-yarder and a 49-yarder. But you know what? I don't know. It's like being in a batting cage. You know, you miss the first ball. You go, okay, I need to hit it more to the right. I think he missed it right.
Yeah.
I think if I can remember correctly.
Yep. Right.
You know, you have to make that adjustment. I mean, come on. This is like miniature golf or something. You're getting a second chance to put it through the uprights. And, you know, you just don't see that many kickers miss two consecutive kicks in a row, especially taking 5 yards off, you know, the prior kick. So, you know, if there was one play, I guess, that really you could say signified this game, it was those two plays.
All right, so let me ask you a couple long-range questions. One about the season. The Bears now at 1-4.
Yes.
They got the Jacksonville Jaguars coming to Soldier Field on Sunday. And then, you know, I mean, how can a team rebound from a 1-4 start? I think the Chiefs last year were 1-5 and they ended up making the playoffs. But let's talk about that. I mean, a 1-4 team with all the injuries. I mean, is it time to start working on some fundamentals and look at the draft board for next year?
Well, you know, I know there's a big discussion right now, what they could put one player on injury reserve and bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Kevin White is in that discussion. You know, should we put him on injury reserve? And I know there's some other players that they're considering which might be able to come back. They'd probably rather put those other players, you know, because Kevin White, with the talent he has, of course, he was injured last year again, though. So, you know, this would, if they put him on injury reserve, this would shift his playing time now into next season, next training camp,
yep.
to start getting confidence, to start playing games. You know, you just wonder, you start getting into your third year. The National Football League stands for not for long. So there's no guarantees you're going to be around, you know, in year four, especially if you end up getting another injury. You know, it's likely that he would either be let go or traded or some degree. So, you know, right now, I mean, they're in a tough situation. And the whole thing is, this is my own personal thoughts, Justin. I never really mind playing against the best teams in the league because, you know what, even under the worst scenario, if you lost to those teams, okay, everybody would say, okay, you lost to the best teams in the league.
Right.
Now, the problem is when you start playing the teams on the lower part, you know, that don't have a good record, maybe don't have any wins, and they somehow, some miraculous way, get a fumble, get a kickoff return, whatever, all of a sudden get points on the board and beat you, it's devastating. Because where do you go then? Who do you tell? You can't even tell your wife or your kids you're a good team because nobody believes you then.
Yeah, right.
You know, did you guys just lose to the worst team in the league or one of the worst teams? So it's I really feel for them right now because, you know, they are going to be going through a couple weeks here where, you know, they're going to have to perform. And obviously everyone is going to expect them to win. And also they're going to be at home.
All right, so let me ask you the big question that's on all Bears fans' mind. You know, we've seen a lot of Brian Hoyer in the last two games. I mean,
yes.
Something like 300 yards the week before, 400 yards this week. He seems to be in control, and there definitely is an air of change or confidence with Bears fans with Brian Hoyer behind center. Do you stay with Brian Hoyer? I mean, I obviously lost the game yesterday, but do you stay with him if Jay Cutler's healthy?
You know, that's really a tough question, and I know, obviously, Coach Fox is contemplating exactly what he's going to do. I think from a fan standpoint, I think there's probably more fans that are on Brian Hoyer's side than Jay Cutler's. You know, he's not done anything really bad. I mean, he's done very well, especially this game here, very high off the charts, passer rating 120. You know, the other thing, too, is when you watch a game – you know, I always like watching what impact the quarterback has, like the dialogue he's having with the linemen and the receivers during the game, going back in a huddle. It looks like Brian Hoyer is doing all those things. You know, he's got good communication going. There's good energy in the huddle. And, you know, sometimes when you watch Jay play, you know, Jay's a little bit more independent. You know, he just likes to do his thing, and he's not necessarily the motivational coach or, you know, speaker that's out there in the huddle. And, you know, he just goes and plays his games. You know, and even on big plays or bad plays, you don't really see any emotions out of him. To me, I don't know. I like to see emotions out of players. It helps me get excited for what they're doing, you know, as far as supporting them and encouraging them. So that's a tough, you know, Coach Fox, that's why you're the head coach. You got to make those decisions.
That's right.
And I think, you know, Brian Hoyer certainly has done very, very well for himself and the Chicago Bears.
Well, we've tried it the other way, right? I mean, Josh McCown was benched for Jay Cutler. Let's try it the other way. Let's just have Hoyer in and see what happens. I mean, it's a bummer that it's week, whatever, five or six here, and we're having this conversation. But it is what it is. Doug Plank, always a pleasure to talk with good old number 46. Joins us on the download every week after the Bears game. Doug, thanks for joining us, giving us your insight.
Hey, Justin, it's going to get better. Think positive.
I'm positive. All right, good, 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 good.
Okay.
Cleveland Indians sweep the Boston Red Sox. How about that? Everyone thought the Red Sox for David Ortiz time. It's going to be Theo versus old team. Nope, gone. Although, I will say, the Indians have as much storied history as the Cubs do when it comes to futility, right? I don't know what their situation is. Very, very close. I don't remember what it is, but something where they haven't won in hundreds of years as well. So maybe that could be good, right?
As long as the Cubs get there.
Yeah, they're right now 0-0 in the first. Yeah, that was did you watch the Bears game?
Yeah, heck yeah.
It was. I mean, I know there's no such thing as a good loss, but, I mean, that's the kind of game you want where they had the ball at the 20-yard line, 30-yard line with, you know, two or three plays, another penalty. Someone got, I don't know, it was a holding penalty on a third and five. This seems to be the one thing that still we're seeing over and over with that Bears team where there's penalties at the wrong times.
Yeah, that in the first half, I think they had like seven or eight penalties that kind of stymied drives.
Yeah. So I guess see if I can get tickets for that Jaguars game.
Oh,
I don't know if he's talking. I was like, I've been thinking about going to that game when it was on the schedule because I'm like, that's the great time of the year to go.
Yeah, weather's nice.
But I'm like, that's Bears. You know, you're not going to be able to get a ticket for that game. Huh? 1-4. I'm just going to keep telling everybody who I know who has tickets, 1-4. Why would you go see a 1-4 team? Coming up, we're going to talk with Joe Swanberg, the man behind the new Netflix show Easy. Also coming up in Studio 435, Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Also keep an eye on the strike news. We haven't really seen anything because they haven't come out and talked at all, but that should be coming out sometime this evening because the deadline is midnight for CPS to go on strike, so we shall know.
Justin, CTU and CPS in the bottom of the ninth right now in negotiations.
Seriously, man. Right?
They are. They're still talking.
I'm assuming they'll come out of their caves for the 10 o'clock news. That's my guess.
I would, maybe.
Maybe a little
maybe.
Bit. Of,
we'll
little,
see.
Some theatrics.
We hope.
All right. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a tremendous filmmaker who has made his way into television. Joe Swanberg is the creator of the new Netflix show Easy. Easy creates a world that features several different characters through an 8-episode run. It's not a serial where we follow one character throughout the show. It's more of a like 8 separate stories tied together by place, and in this case, that place is Chicago. It has some serious A-list talent from Orlando Bloom to Hannibal Buress to Dave Franco to Kate Micucci, as well as a who's who of Chicago improvisers. Swanberg has directed several feature films, including the film Drinking Buddies and Digging for Fire, and he returns to the download tonight. Joe, good to see you.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
Congrats on the show, man.
Thanks.
Where'd this come about? I mean, because did you have an interest in getting into more serialized television stuff? Or
not
how did this work?
Really. It actually came about through not wanting to do TV, or rather taking a meeting with somebody and spending most of the meeting talking about what I didn't like about TV. And then weirdly, the few things that were left kind of looked like a TV show. It was like, if I don't do this, 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 oh, wait a minute. Those other things might be really cool. And so I pitched it to Netflix as basically, let me keep making my movies, but I'll do them as 30 minutes rather than 90 minutes. Yeah. And some of these characters will know each other, which maybe will make it feel more like a TV show. But we approached them like 8 short films, basically.
And that, and it feels that way. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is beside that slacker mentality where, you know, like it's almost like you're going character to character. They cross in the night. They are these sort of short films. I mean, when you set out to do that, what's the challenge of doing? Just getting everything in there in a 30-minute
story? I mean, a bit of the challenge was, you know, I've directed some episodes of TV shows, other people's shows. And, you know, once you get it up and running, it's always a challenge to do the pilot and create the world. But once you get it up and running, you kind of know the world. We never knew our world. You know, we had 8 different worlds. And so that was a bit of a challenge. But for me, that's offset by my own habits as a viewer. You know, I have 2 kids and not a ton of time to watch television. And so I was like, let me make a show that I would actually watch. And if these things were 8 separate stories and you could just kind of pick them off in random order whenever you had 25 minutes to kill, maybe I would watch that show. I would have time at least to watch that show. And so but making it, there were definitely days where all of us were like, ugh, it would be a lot nicer if we just had 3 central characters that we were
following. It was a 90-minute movie, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's really a story about modern relationships, whether that be dating, whether it be marriage, sex, sibling relationships. There's a lot that goes in, but it is really just about the modern-day relationship.
Totally. I agree, and I would say all my movies are. I can't help but be myself. And so no matter what project I've ever set out on, it always ends up being a relationship thing. So I tried to spread that around. You know, I mean, it's like very sex heavy, which was not necessarily like the goal going in, but I also can't help but be myself. And so it kind of kept going there too. But I did want to get into sibling stuff. I did want to get into marriage with and without kids. And a lot of things that I feel, you know, that I think are definitely being talked about. It's not like there aren't shows on TV about relationships, but I really wanted to make a show for adults and to have that, the level of that conversation be elevated a bit beyond network or even cable TV, where it's kind of aiming at a wider group of people. I was like, we have 8 chances to aim at specific groups of people. And so my feeling was like, okay, even if you just are interested in these one character or this one episode, if you watched 1 out of 8, that would still be more than you watched of most TV shows. I was like, maybe that's an all right way to approach it.
You, as a filmmaker, you've always had relationships front and center. And obviously relationships of any form, conflict, that makes great cinema or television. But what is it about the relationship that draws you in? Why aren't you writing more sci-fi or writing stories about, you know, gangsters in 1930s? What is it about the modern relationship that keeps drawing you in?
It's a good question. I don't know. I wish I was making a sci-fi movie right now. It's weird because when I go to the movies or when I watch TV, I definitely am not only into relationship stuff. I think there's an aspect of being curious about other people's relationships. It's a thing we don't get to talk to each other about all that much. There's kind of a polite dividing line where you stop asking questions at a certain point. I'm always like, yeah, but I'm way more curious about what's going on behind the scenes. You guys are presenting this really good front, but I know that you must fight. I know that there must be issues. So I think that the work has always been a way to share that with the actors, to ask them questions. You know, it's like when you're working on something collaboratively with a group of people, the politeness gets to go away.
Right.
And you get to ask each other real questions and talk about that real stuff.
Part of the relationship and what you can explore and what you're doing with the 8 short film style is you really can probe, as you said, not just the love aspect of relationships, but where it kind of gets dysfunctional or when it kind of breaks apart. And you seem to be really good at that. Like, you go right to the core of where, you know, you could feel that tension and that tension in the room when you're watching the show going, yeah, this is gonna be my life. But talk about that. I mean, as you talk about exploring relationships, how important is it to be real and to show the pain and some of the parts that usually aren't shown?
Well, for me, it's really important. I mean, that grew out of, as a movie watcher, I would say all the way back into my teenage years, like movies were, before I could travel to Europe, movies were a way to see Europe. Before I was in a relationship, movies were a way to, you know, witness relationships. And so they were always validating for me in some sense, especially when I saw some moment in a movie or some moment in a TV show where I was like, oh, I'm the only person. I thought I was the only person who did that or thought that. And now I'm seeing this character say that or do that. And those moments always hit me really hard. And so I think when I started making my own stuff, that was a big kind of guiding light. Like make work that gets one level beyond the surface level, and then maybe people will realize they're not so crazy and they're not so alone.
Joe Swanberg is my guest tonight. The show Easy is on Netflix. Check it out. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Joe. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Joe Swanberg, filmmaker, I would now say executive, television executive producer. He created the show Easy, which is on Netflix. You can find it now. Successful reviews. People seem to love it. Let's talk about the characters that are in the show, because obviously you've got some A-list talent actors that come in, but yeah. What really draws the viewer in is not just the characters, but the character of place. And we talked about this the last time around about how Chicago plays a role.
Yeah.
Chicago is, it's really great to see some of the stuff that you use as backdrop. It's not the same old Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
But the concept, talk about when putting this together, how Chicago plays a role.
Well, it's so useful to shoot here because I know the city. I know the neighborhoods. And so I've made movies in New York and LA. It's nice to work there. And it's fun to have an outsider's perspective, but it's nice to know, to build a character. I usually work with the actors pretty early on. And so it's nice to build these characters and be able to say to an actor, all right, this is the neighborhood I think you live in. I think this is the bar you would drink at. This is the restaurant you and your wife would go to. This is the activity you would do with your kids. This is the park you guys would play at. To know that and be able to shoot at those places, I think, you know, hopefully for Chicagoans, the big hope is that they see their actual real city on a show. But I think even for people who live anywhere in the world, because now Netflix is global, which is really crazy. So for somebody in Germany who's watching Easy, hopefully that specificity also registers. Even though it might not be familiar, there's a sense of accuracy of a kind of feeling of a neighborhood. And Chicago's a really neighborhoody city. So I do think that these neighborhoods have character that translates. Whether you're in somebody's house or outside of that house, you get the vibe.
You always think about, I think about shows like Girls or even Bored to Death, which used to be on HBO or even Entourage, if you will, about Los Angeles. But there always is the best shows that are produced have place, you know, that they're using. Different, and it's great to see that Chicago has that place. For Girls, for instance, that's a very Brooklyn kind of experience. What is the experience for Chicago? I mean, when you think about that, I mean, if you're selling Chicago as a character, in this, what Chicago is being shown in this?
Well, I have to be careful. You know, I have to specify. So here's the thing about this show. I would love for this show to last for 25 years and explore all kinds of characters all over the city, check back in on these people, like some big epic Boyhood style, like massive project. That's the dream. Season one, these first eight episodes are Northside centric. We're in Logan Square, Lincoln Square, Roscoe Village. You know, we're sort of like moving around. We get down to Pilsen for one of the episodes, and we're occasionally downtown, but just every once in a while. There's so much Chicago that I don't want anybody to tune in and go, that's not Chicago. I've never hung out in those neighborhoods.
I mean, that's going to happen. That's just, especially when you have such a success like this.
So the dream and the goal is to sort of get everywhere. The Chicago we're looking at in these eight episodes, I think, ranges from a kind of like artistic and young Chicago to a kind of entering the middle class and upper middle class starting families Chicago. And that's a pretty, to me, that's a hugely wide range that encompasses a lot of people. But I also know that it's a very narrow subset of what's going on in Chicago at large. So I would ask people, bear with me. I do know there's a lot more to Chicago. Right? I am going somewhere with this. You know, I live in Ravenswood, Lincoln Square. So there's definitely characters that are in that zone. It's the neighborhood I know the best. I thought I could do the best job being really specific and accurate to it. And then the, you know, sort of like more hipster neighborhoods are also represented this time out.
What I really liked about it, though, and I understand that, and it's great that you point out that there are a lot, there's a lot more of Chicago to explore, not even just Chicago, I'm sure suburbs, yeah, too, everything involved. But the Chicago that was even represented in this is not a Chicago that usually is represented. You're not seeing Lincoln
Square,
and even Logan Square to a point, which is, you know, off the hook at this point, is not being shown this kind of way.
Yes, I totally agree. And that was important. I mean, it's nice. I would say, as a filmmaker, it's always nice to shoot in a restaurant nobody's ever shot in before. Find an alley or a street that's fresh to look at. You know, you kind of this is not any kind of big conspiracy, but what happens is there's a whole industry of location scouting, of the, you know, Bureau of Tourism and all these kind of things that are pushing filmmakers who come to town towards certain places. Some parts of Chicago look really pretty. Why you see them in everything.
Like the shot in Lincoln Park where there's the bridge over where you can see the skyline over the pond.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful shot.
You'll see it in every David Schwimmer movie, right? That's essentially it.
And so I understand if you don't live here why when you come on your one-day Chicago location scout and that people take you to that bridge, you're like, ooh, we should shoot here. This is really pretty. When you do live here, you're like, oh, there's a lot more going on here. And also there's a current running through the show of entrepreneurism, of a kind of thing that I'm noticing in Chicago businesses. You know, Dark Matter Coffee's featured prominently, Half Acre Brewery. We shot a lot of restaurants that are kind of like, you know, new within the last couple years. I'm personally very excited by what I'm noticing to be a kind of like ethical business growth with a lot of these places that are not interested in just becoming like massive capitalist corporations. Mm-hmm. But have kind of started with an ideal in place and then grown with that same ideal in place. And so, you know, the show is an ability to spotlight things that I love about Chicago. And so I'm kind of pointing that spotlight.
And, I mean, people are having fun with it. I mean, DNA Info is trying to track exactly where the shots are.
And my producer sent me that. He's like, wow, that looks like a lot of work figuring that out.
But, I mean, there seems to be, for at least for Chicagoans, for people who live here and live in those neighborhoods, there seems to be a secondary level to this. And that's good television.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's always been nice for me. There is this kind of, like, weird cognitive dissonance when you see your neighborhood on screen. You know, it's like a weird, I've had those kind of weird moments where you're like, oh my God, that's my park they're walking through right now. This is so crazy, but they're fake. And so I'm trying to mix that up by having, you know, like the restaurants are playing themselves, just like these actors are playing, you know, themselves in some regard. They have fake names, but, you know, they're kind of contributing to this. And so the show is definitely choosing to take place in real Chicago versus we call Dark Matter Coffee, you know, the coffee co-op and put stick some generic sign on it.
Well, so, I mean, that's the fun. That's the secondary part where you expect a date scene, a first date scene to take place in a bar.
Yeah.
We get that. Yeah. So it could be any bar.
It could be
but
any bar.
But to have it be in Logan Square at the Tiki Bar there, it's that secondary thing where you're like, I've sat there.
Yeah.
I know that place.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it great for Chicago.
Yeah, I hope so. And it's really fun for me, too. I mean, it made it nice to shoot and it made it, you know, all these movies for me have been an opportunity to collaborate with actors, but also when I'm shooting in Chicago, an opportunity to get to know my own city better. And so, you know, having these eight episodes that aren't, you know, like Seinfeld, they're just in the same diner, the same, you know, you sort of build the world and then you just exist in that world. Nothing against Seinfeld. I love that show. But, you know, it's like having eight different episodes with these eight different characters. I was like, ooh, this is so rich and meaty. Like, I really get to build these eight stories and also go on my own one day location scout. But, you know, I got to just see so many new places. And as I move through the city, fingers crossed, in subsequent seasons, the show hopefully for me will be this like passport into other neighborhoods. It would be nice now that the show's out there. It's always tricky with the first season because people are like, what are you making?
Right.
But now that people know the show, I'm hoping that going into subsequent seasons, people are like, hey, why don't you
come over here?
Check out my neighborhood. You didn't shoot here. I'll show you all the cool places.
Did you have name rec going into some of these places in Lincoln Square? They know your work. They know that
Lincoln Square does. And I would say in general, you know, there's a dual kind of thing going on. I mean, this is a little like inside baseball. But when you have Orlando Bloom in town, there's a vested interest in not everybody knowing that. Right. And so we were doing a little bit of covert this is a little show, and we're not saying what it is.
Yeah, the guy from Lord of the Rings. Yeah,
exactly. But then we had these like really funny moments where people are arriving, you know, thinking that they're showing up for a web show, and right. It's like Orlando Bloom there. People are like, what is like, this?
Yeah, you just say, I'm at Columbia College. I'm doing a short film. Can I do this? Orlando's going to be in it. Joe Swanberg's my guest tonight. He's the creator of the new Netflix show, Easy. You can find it, of course, on Netflix. He's directed several feature films, including Drinking Buddies, Digging for Fire, which we had you in for last time. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. When we come back, we got to talk about the collaborative nature of shooting this with the actors. The characters, as you mentioned, the idea that you work with them way in advance and then essentially improvise the script. I mean, I want to talk about that concept met with your concept of shooting film. And we talked about this last time, an expedient, like almost efficient way that you do work. Joe Swanberg, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Joe Swanberg, great filmmaker here in Chicago, great films. He's done so many, including Drinking Buddies, Digging for Fire. And now, of course, he's the man behind Easy, which is on Netflix, and you can get it now. Getting so much attention for the work, for making the transition from film to television. But it's really not television. It's 30-minute short films.
It was the nicest transition I could have hoped to make because I got to keep working exactly the same way as I've done the movies. I mean, I really didn't notice any difference.
One of the great things about the show is it feels, and I'll ask you about this, but it feels improvised, meaning that you have a lot of moments, and you've done this throughout your career, where it's not a scripted experience. And you use a lot of Chicago improvisers. We see right at the top, T.J. Jagodowsky is the first guy that we see in the first episode. But you also have, like we mentioned, Orlando Bloom, Dave Franco's in it, Kate Micucci, others who may not, when I think of Orlando Bloom or Dave Franco, have that background in improvisation. How do you work with actors to develop the character and get them ready for a Joe Swanberg picture?
Well, it is a lot of preparation ahead of time. And so, you know, depending on the shooting order, we shot these episodes between November and February. So the actors who were in the later episodes, I had several months to work with. The actors who were in the early episodes, maybe we had a few weeks. But, you know, I try and get to know them as well as possible. They're usually connecting to the story just through like a one paragraph or maybe one page, very brief outline or summary of some of the ideas. And then we're really building that together. And so, you know, with Dave, who and a lot of these relationships, you know, I'd worked with Orlando in the last movie. Dave, though we hadn't worked together, we've been trying to work together for a couple of years. So I have had this ongoing conversation with him. It's about connecting it to something that he can get into. So maybe I'll call Dave Franco and say, okay, there's three ideas that you might fit into here. I really want to work with you on this. Which of these are you responding to best? And then once that connection happens, casting the rest of it, and then sort of getting, you know, Dave and Evan, who play brothers in the show but haven't met each other in real life, giving them enough time to start talking, connect on that kind of stuff, figure out what that backstory is, what similarities they might have, and then also introducing them to Chicago. So the process starts ahead of time saying, okay, I think you guys live in this neighborhood, like just so you know, let me hit you with some music you might listen to. These are some of the Chicago bands that I think Dave's character is into. And, you know, this is like a collaborative process with a lot of people as well, because I have a music supervisor who's maybe saying to me, oh, here's
this
four bands
yeah,
who you don't know right now, but by the time the show comes out next year, these are the bands his character would be listening to. And, you know, the goal is just about getting it right. I mean, ideally what we put on screen feels accurate. And so there's storytelling going on, but there's also a level of almost documentary filmmaking going on.
And what I really like is specifically with some of the stars, because you expect improvising from Chicagoans.
Yeah.
You know, people who are 3 Second City and Improv Olympic, and you see that. There is this moment where you marvel at their talent, their ability to not be on script, to have Orlando Bloom be able to do this too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can do all these things and you can improvise.
Yeah.
I mean, are they comfortable in your construct of how you make films?
Well, I would say that I'm like pitching them not on the idea of improvising, but almost on the idea of just existing as they would in the scene, and then hoping that the riffs and the way that they connect with each other will be interesting to watch. Usually that's interesting to watch to me. Mm-hmm. It's like eavesdropping more than improvising. You know, it's you guys have this conversation, and then I'm going to choose where we put the camera and how we edit that conversation together to make sure that it's fitting into the story that we're telling. And then, you know, to a greater or lesser degree, people want to add comedy to that, add drama to that, add their own lives to that. And so, you know, each episode, because it's a different cast and a different storyline, tonally had a really different feel. And so with Orlando, Mollen, and Kate, they just got along famously. That whole week was a big, revelrous, fun, and you feel that on screen.
Yeah,
I mean, that kind of chemistry and connection just, I believe, naturally comes through. And then I think with other casts, people just have different working process. So some people, when we finish a working day, want to go eat. And I'm like, great, let's go to Longman and Eagle. We're going to buy a big fancy meal and we're going to be out until 2 a.m. drinking and hanging out. Other people want to go home to their hotel and start prepping for the next day. And then I'm getting emails or texts like, you know, this scene we're shooting tomorrow, what's going on here? I like that people have different process. So I'm kind of around to be the ringleader of however they want to do it. And with the goal of all those 8 episodes feeling connected, despite the fact that we're taking a lot of different working process and a lot of different vibes and trying to like fit them into something that feels like a show.
And I love that you even refer to each episode as a cast, a different cast, because it is a different cast. But give us an idea. How long does the episode with Orlando Bloom, how long does that take? I mean, is that a couple days? I mean, how
it is quick. 4 days of shooting. The rhythm we got into is that most of the actors would arrive on a Sunday. We would go out to dinner that night if people wanted to. And really, because I've acted in a bunch of movies and I'm very sensitive to that process. It's hard to get on an airplane and fly to Chicago and have to be on and go meet a lot of people.
Right.
So typically there was an invitation to hang out on Sunday if people wanted to. And Monday would be used as a wardrobe fitting, go look at some of the locations, maybe meet some of the real people who've inspired, you know, the locations or the jobs that are in the show, and then hang out and just kind of get on the same page. And then we would shoot Tuesday through Friday, and then everybody would fly home Saturday.
I can understand really why you say you want to do this for 25 years.
Yeah,
it's like it's like a job. It's a day job. You do this every that's crazy.
And then I would lose that cast on Saturday, and then the next cast would arrive on Sunday, and I'd be like, okay, totally different vibe and experience right now. So that was really fun, but that's over. New challenge, new storyline, new everything.
It's so ensemble driven in a way, because you're talking about cast and everybody having to feel your way. I mean, there isn't sort of a Joe Swanberg way. And, you know, you're going onto the set, you know, we're going to do this. Here's your call sheet. This is where you're here for 12 hours and get out of my face.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is this sort of organic, collaborative ensemble feel to not just these shows, but what you've done in the past.
Yeah. And it keeps it exciting for me. I mean, one of the things in that initial meeting where I was like, these are the things I don't like about TV. One of those things was, I don't know that there's characters I want to spend 6 or 7 years with. I have a pretty short attention span. I'm used to making movies. We shoot for a month, I edit and finish that movie, and then I'm done. I don't ever go revisit those characters again. So in thinking about the benefits of long-term storytelling and television, which I do like, you know, there's shows from my childhood where I grew up with those people. I mean, when a show's been on TV for 12 years, you know them as well as your friends or family. You know, there's like
a real
connection.
Kid, you know, anyway, 12 to 16 years old, what were the shows that inspired you?
I would say like something like The Wonder Years. I feel like I was part of that family. I know those characters, you know? And despite the fact that I have never met any of them in real life, if I saw them, I would assume things and just be like, hey, I know you.
I know you.
And, you know, something like The Simpsons, which has like really been running for a long time, you know, heavily informed my sense of humor at a like formative transitional period of my life where I think everybody's like figuring out, who am I going to be? What do I think is funny? Which of these like cultural things push my buttons? And so the idea of television having the ability to exist for a long time is exciting to me. But the idea of having to choose today characters that I'm still going to care about 15 years from now felt to me too intimidating to ever really get started down that road. And so what I love about Easy is I don't have to choose anything. Each season, if I want to bring people back, if there's interesting ways to follow up on these stories, great. If I want a new cast, great. The show never has to define itself. So every time out, it can be about what's going on in the world right now. It can be about what I'm interested in. It could be about this thing that I didn't even know about 2 months ago that now is going on. And that to me felt like finally, oh, okay, I can utilize that aspect without getting trapped in it.
You've honed your particular style. I mean, your style of really being efficient, and you know, said, we shoot for a month, and I edit my movies out. I mean, there were times in your career you're putting 5-6 movies out a year. It's crazy.
Yes.
How have you evolved? You know, as you work with Easy and you start to do 30-minute shorts, it's still fast, it's still that. But how have you, as a filmmaker and a creator, and in your own style, how have you matured and evolved to be more efficient?
I think I'm less, actually. But I think one of the things that's happened that's been a change is story has become more important over the years. If you would have talked to me 5 or 6 years ago, I would have said, who cares about story? We've had 100 years of movies. Story, we all know the story. A movie starts, you've already watched the trailer, you know exactly what's going to happen. I'm interested in character nuance. How are these people talking to each other? What are they not saying? So I'm still interested in all of that, but I'm now also interested in story. And so I would say if you look at Easy versus the movies from a couple years ago, those movies were entirely focused on just interactions, conversations. And now with Easy, it's creeping in. I think it started with Drinking Buddies, really, but I've evolved to a place now where I'm building these things based on the ability to tell a story. And so I think theme is still important. I think if you watch each of the 8 episodes, you could probably say, this one's about this. But within that, and without falling into the, like, 3-act, you know, prison of, like, this has to happen at this page.
Yeah, right.
You know, because we're still working from these very loose outlines. But those outlines even have a lot more shape than I would say they used to.
So interesting.
And I think it's powerful. I mean, I really have come to believe in story's ability to transcend culture, to transcend class. There are these interesting archetypes that we keep seeing again and again and again. And I do think that they have a place. But I also think that they need to be refreshed. Because, you know, you go to the movies, I mean, right now particularly, it's just sequels and reboots and just this kind of regurgitation. And in many ways, that's doing a disservice to the power of the story. And so I think it occurred to me at some point, oh, you can still tell these stories. And actually, the only way to make them fun and the only way to make them have the power that they originally had is to make it in such a way where the audience, once again, doesn't know exactly what's going to happen. And so that's really hard.
That's interesting, yeah. When are you going to know if there's going to be a Easy season 2? Is it the same kind of network style where they're like, we have to...
No, it's not. Netflix,
you have to pitch again?
No, I won't have to pitch again, but Netflix is running the data, is what I would say about it.
You
know, it's very... it's interesting because Netflix is... In many ways, the data is liberating, right? So when I pitched this show... No typical TV station would ever make this show. When I go in on the pitch and I'm like, I'm not going to know what the episodes are about. I'm going to improvise them with the cast. You're going to have to pay for it and not know what you're going to get. Most people need to see every line of every script and know exactly what they're going to get. And so in my case, the data was liberating because Netflix said, okay, this many people have watched Drinking Buddies. This many people have watched Happy Christmas. This many people watched Digging for Fire. All right, at this price point, we think whatever this show is, we'll do all right. And so I had so much freedom. I mean, it was incredibly dreamy in terms of the creative process. Now that the show's out, we'll see if the data is friendly to me because they're going to say, okay, the show succeeded based on our barometer of what we consider success. Or they're going to say, I don't know that we want to do that again. That was all right.
Our robots are saying.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the good news is if the data's on my side, then I get to be free for forever, you know, until the data's not. And so I actually would rather take that gamble than the more human network executive who's like, oh, I personally don't like the show. It's not my thing. And then, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Always great talking to you, Joe.
Nice to talk to
Joe
you.
Joe Swanberg, the creator of Easy, the Netflix show, which is out now. Go check it out. Also, of course, filmmaker who's had films like Drinking Buddy, Happy Christmas, Digging for Fire, so many different films. Good luck with the series. I hope
the data goes
in your way because I'd love to see some more. Great. Thanks for being my guest, man.
Thank you.
Pete, I'm okay with having Joe Swanberg as a regular on Download. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like he becomes sort of our, like if we were Conan, he becomes, I don't know. I don't even know who Conan's regulars are. I was going to say, that's such a 1998 thing to say, right?
But like, I think Jimmy Fallon, when he does the guests, a guest, I think he takes somebody from Saturday Night Live. Well, right. Let's call up to Studio 8A and have them come down.
He's our Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. Right?
No, he's great, and the show's great, and awesome to have him back in studio. So, all right, coming up 10 o'clock. I'm excited about this. The band is setting up as we speak. Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Miles Nielsen, of course. The Rockford-based Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. They got a show coming up at Lincoln Hall and one in Joliet coming up this weekend. They're going to be performing live in Studio 435 here on The Download. I'm excited about that, right?
Great.
It's always good. And if you're wondering, and Rob will have the updates as well on the Cubs game, the Cubs right now up 3-1, I think in the fourth inning maybe. We're in commercial break, so somewhere in that area. Arrieta, of course, hits the 3-run homer. What's with the pitchers hitting home runs?
Yeah, they have I think they have most of the RBIs in the series. So yeah. Hendricks had a couple in the other game.
And so when they get to the World Series, they go, when they're playing in the AL parks, they get DH, right?
Mm-hmm.
And see, now it's a disadvantage. For so many years, it was the other way around. Now it's a disadvantage. Now Arrieta's going to have to play DH. Travis Wood's going to have to play third.
Well, with Joe Madden, you never know what his lineup might be.
All right, so we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll get some updates with Rob Martyr and Esmeralda Leon, and we'll come back. We'll do some live music as well. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. We'll get you updated on the Chicago teacher strike. Any extra information that might come out tonight? As I said, Karen Lewis saying in press conference at 10 o'clock that they're still working hard, still no answer to or any contract to come from negotiations, but they're continuing. So we'll keep you updated here at WGN Radio. Well, it's time for Studio 435, of course, our weekly segment that showcases live music in our Allstate Showcase studio here on beautiful Michigan Avenue by some of the best bands in the region. Tonight, no exception, in studio, the Rockford outfit, Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Yeah. All right. They just put out an album this summer called Heavy Metal, their third LP, and they're playing this Friday at Lincoln Hall in Lincoln Park. And on Saturday, they're going to be at the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday. In studio, Miles Nielsen, of course, and the band, the Rusted Hearts. We've got Jeff Werkle, Fast Dave McClellan, Dan McMahon, Adam the Dark Lord Plowman. They're all here, and they're ready to give us their first song tonight, the title track, Heavy Metal. Are you ready? Here we go. Here they are, live in studio with the track Heavy Metal here on 720 WGN.
One, two, three, four. My heart is heavier than metal now. My eyes so swollen by the booze. I don't know what I did or how I've gotten here. And all I know is that's the truth. I want to swing you back and forth just like a pendulum and let you know this is a ride. And then I feel just like a kid inside a candy shop when everything is on the house. Let's act like animals. Just like animals, act like animals. My head is pounding like a thousand hammers at a time. With every nail I cross the line. I want to treat you to the finer wines and all the lines. Let you know that I'm a prize. Tack like animals. Just like animals. Tack like animals.
are you and who do you think you are? I didn't think that you would go that far, but you did. Who are you and who do you think you are? I didn't think that you would go that far, but you did. My heart is heavier than metal now. My eyes were wild and you were loose. I don't know what I did or how you've gotten here. And all I know is that's the truth. I want to swing you back and forth just like a tire swing. And let you know that I'm all right. And then I feel just like a kid on the 4th of July. The fireworks inside my eyes. Tag like animals. Just like animals. Tag like animals.
Yeah! Give it up, Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts in studio here in Studio 435.
Oh, I thought the Cubs hit one or something.
No, that's all you guys, man. It's all you. Why don't you guys come on up to the table here? We'll take a quick break, and we'll get Miles Nielsen and some of the guys from Rusted Hearts on the microphone. We'll also have some more live music tonight here in Studio 435 here in the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, in studio, Studio 435 tonight. My pleasure to welcome Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Great track you guys just played. Thanks for being here, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
All right, so let's get right into it. I mean, everybody's on the mic, which is awesome. It's good to talk to all you guys. Let's, you know, talk about the influences, that music. I mean, because I hear a little Tom Petty. I hear I was interested and curious to hear or read the website today about some of the influences, including band like Jellyfish, which is a band I haven't thought about in a long time. But where do the musical influences come from this band?
I think, you know, all across the board. You know, if you look at everyone in this band has been playing out in different outfits for years, and you know, all of us have experienced a ton of different genres. You know, inside of that, I think all of those, you know, all of those working things come into play in this band. You know, you can pull from, like for me, you know, the Jellyfish thing was just the pop sensibility, but also the production aspect of what they were doing is something that I think, you know, something that we take pride in is actually the production on our records. You know, it's thought out, it's storyboarding, it's pulling away, you know, the arrangements, like this comes in here, this might only happen once inside of a tune, and then we never touch that tone again. And, you know, it's those kind of things that I think, and then we go into, you know, Adam, myself, and Dan were in a band that, you know, played, all we rehearsed was soul tunes, you know. So, you know, we pull from there, and then, you know, Adam's background, Dan's background, Dave's got a, you know, choral background for sure. Jeff's played in jam blues bands and, you know,
well, I mean,
psychedelic
outfits
for years.
Let's talk about that. I mean, you guys are working musicians. I mean, you all are continuing to be able to produce music at a high level. I mean, just listening to the track we just heard, I mean, the musicianship on it is tremendous. The harmonies, everything about it. Talk about how your backgrounds, what your past experiences bring to this band.
Well, I was in choirs a lot growing up, so, I mean, that helps with just being able to arrange harmonies and just know what parts to sing and blending, too. Like, I think we all blend together pretty well now.
Yeah, absolutely.
After having sung.
It took a little work for, you know, for us to realize how we all can blend together, too, you know. Someone's voice is louder, someone's voice isn't, you know, someone's better at the top, someone's better in the middle, someone's better at the low end. Or sometimes we completely flip-flop that and, you know, everyone's taking a different part, you know.
Depending on the song,
Well, talk about your experiences. I mean, playing drums in a sort of jam band, a blues jam band, what do you bring to this band from that experience?
Well, for me, I've always tried to be as diverse as I could. You know, as far as drum influences go, I'm mostly coming from the Led Zeppelins and things like that. But, you know, like Miles said, I've played with a lot of blues acts and a variety of other bands, and grew up, with music class all the way through school. So I played in a variety of, for pit orchestras, jazz band, concert, marching band, everything all the way across the board, just to try and learn as much as I could and be, versatile.
And let me point out that had I not known Jeff in Rockford, been such a small community, had I not known him for the last, 14 years of my life, seeing him play about, if he just met the day that he joined our band, I would have said he was probably related to John Bonham in some sort of way. And I would never would have known he played in a blues, funk, jazz, all these things. But because, the pool of musicians that we found there, it's a pretty small market of people.
Tell me a little bit about the Rockford music scene. I mean, are we looking at it here? I mean, are there
no. There's a good scene. There's a bunch of creative people out there, man, making good music. And it's a scene that I think it's just everyone's pushing everybody at the current moment. They're being smart, and it's a cheap and affordable place to live. As far as being an artist, I think of any sort, if you're making, we have people that make big sculptures and, have huge, steel presses and things in their properties that they're making. You can't do that necessarily here because of your overhead. So out there, you're allowed to actually tap into your creativity faster, I think, because you're not worried so much about how am I paying for this to be creative. Your creativity is coming first, and it's forcing the end.
That's an amazing point. You think about the idea that obviously if you're living in a big city like New York City or Chicago, you may have more access to the resources around you, or more like-minded musicians, but you're living in a closet,
right?
Yeah. You're getting drinking water from the river, and you're essentially paying,
you're writing jingles half your time.
Yeah, right.
Well, otherwise, I think you have to be built for that. Like, if you want to grind out New York and be a New York musician for your whole life, you have to be willing to, I'm going to lug my drums down to the subway. I'm going to take them here. I'm going to move them three different times throughout the night. I have a friend out there that plays in, a jazz and then a fusion. And then he plays steel drum as well. And he's constantly getting on the subway with gear and just, hustling here. And then he's here. Mm-hmm. And, all throughout a day, I'm like, you did three gigs today. He's like, well, my place is fairly expensive, but it's convenient.
Gig, right?
That's a lot of gig, and I can take 4 days off and not do anything.
Well, let me ask you guys, because you just kind of started it. I don't know if you started a tour or just, obviously we start coming up here at Lincoln Hall, but how often are you guys playing together and playing regional? I mean, is it specific that you'll play in Rockford all the time and then branch out, or how does it work?
I believe we went from Rockford to Scottsdale to 3 days in Mexico, back to Scottsdale, to Chicago, to Cleveland the night they won the championship. That was a fantastic show. Great crowd. They hadn't won since 1953, and we play that night in Cleveland, so that was convenient.
Game 7.
It's like being on the radio in Chicago on Monday when the Cubs are playing.
Right.
It's perfect. But then we went from Cleveland and then walked our way all the way up into Maine, and we went from Rockford to Mexico to Rockford to Maine in 2.5 weeks, and since we've been back through the Midwest, sort of through the South, and then over into Colorado, up into Utah, back through, and then
back to the East Coast.
And then we went back to the East Coast, and so it's sort of like we are a working man's band, we really don't. I mean, unfortunately
the
or fortunately,
never ends.
It never ends. I call it life tour.
Life tour. I love it. We're talking with Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts in Studio 435 tonight. Let's hear another track. What do you guys want to play?
This is going to be a tune called Is This Life? It's the second tune on the record.
Is This Life? Okay, the band Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts are going to be playing at Lincoln Hall this Friday night, right here in Lincoln Park. They're going to be at the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday. The album, which was just put out this summer, is called Heavy Metal. It's their third LP. Rockford-based, Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Here's the track, Is This Life? All right, there we go.
I'm prisoner of the war. You're lying, I'm a wolf. You're prisoners no more. In this broken world, I'm a martyr for you, girl. You were prisoners no more.
Well, I would lie for you, I will. Yeah, I would die for you, I will. Just give it time. You're gonna make it just fine. Tell me why I'm yours. Yeah, we're prisoners no more. And all these little girls in their diamonds and their pearls. Yeah, we're prisoners no more. Well, I would lie for you, I will. Yeah, I would die for you, I will. Just give it time. You're gonna make it just just give me time, baby. Ooh, ooh, just give me time, girl.
Yes, Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts in studio tonight, Studio 435. They got a show coming up at Lincoln Hall on Friday night here in Lincoln Park. And they're also going to be at the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday. More with the band around the table, and we'll get some more live music coming up here after the news. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Studio 435, our weekly segment showcasing live music, our All-State Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. We offer up some of the best bands in the region tonight, no exception, as I turn on all the mics for Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. Ooh. All around the studio, all around the table right now. Their album Heavy Metal just came out this summer, their third LP. They're going to be playing Lincoln Hall on Friday night, and they're also going to be playing the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday night, live here in studio. All right, so we were talking before you guys played again, just about the idea of being working musicians. I mean, is this, as you guys sort of continue to be able to make music at such a high level and do this, essentially for a living, I mean, what does it take to do this? What's the temperament like? What are the things you have to go through to be a working musician who grinds it out in Rockford and tours the country every single week?
You will experience just about everything. I mean, at least, I feel like as far as all of us together, there's not a whole lot of life that we haven't, trudged over together, through this thing of, and that's just been in, the 3.5, 4 years that these Dave and Jeff have been in the band. We had, another 2 years before that, and then in another band before that, we were in, we toured everywhere as well. The stories are endless. The memories are foggy. the scars are real.
Is it hard life?
It is a hard life. It's like I have kids, a lot of us in the band have kids, and when you say goodbye to him, you know you're not going to see him for weeks at a time, you're like, that's not a great feeling to walk away from. You know that as an adult, you sort of can put it in a place where, you know, if your chips are played right, you're going to come back and squeeze them again. You know, they look at it at that moment of just like complete heartbreak. So you're like, this is a real feeling. And, you know, you're the cause of this real feeling. So, you know, that leaves a little wound on you. You know, it takes a couple days to get into that role of just being out and being like, all right, now we're out as the band. And we're a whole different beast when we like, you know, tighten the screws down and throw the oil in the machine. It's a different beast. And if we're out for 3 weeks at a time, it's just like, it's so well oiled and just like, it's routine, but in the most creative way. Like, we can be creative inside of that because it's just like, oh, and it's going and it's working. And we know, you know, we're just moving. The thing is just, you know, it's on the rails. It's not
off.
It's
a nice feeling when all that is expected of you that day is to wake up and play music, you know?
Right. Yeah, right. That's a great point. That's the positive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Minus maybe a gas station stop for food or, you know, like.
Those are the minuses.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to the music. I mean, for you guys to be able to, you know, have three LPs under your belt, talk about the process. Because you talk about, you know, getting in studio and working on the album and working with the arrangements, working with producing the music. For you guys, I mean, what's the process like for you? I mean, is it a collaborative experience? I mean, is Miles, are you taking the lead and people are filling in? Or is it something that you guys, like you said, kind of have to figure out, you know, as you go along?
I think that we have a very diplomatic process inside of our band. I don't think it's always been that way. But I think as we go, we found a producer that we really click with. He's like he's Yoda, you know. I guess I'm Luke, and we have like
an army of Jedi.
Well, I would say that there's definitely like Dan's like Han Solo.
Okay.
Adam's Boba Fett.
Okay.
Jeff is definitely Chewbacca. And Dave is R2-D2. You know, we can very much be Star Wars. You know.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So Adam can pull the horns out of his jetpack and like, you know, take us to outer space, and Dan can, you know, fly the Millennium Falcon at Millennium, you know, speed or, you know, whatever, light speed. And Jeff, instead of making those noises, he coughs a lot. But
all right, so let's hear some music. What do you guys? Let's hear another track here in Studio 435. What do you guys want to
play? Yeah, this is a tune off the new record as well. This is the third track off the record. It's a tune called Simple Times.
Simple Times. All right. Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts in Studio 435 tonight. The album's called Heavy Metal. Simpler Times is the track. Let me just introduce everybody. Miles Nielsen, Jeff Werkel, Fast Dave McClellan, Dan McMahon, and Adam the Dark Lord Plamen. In studio, here we go, live with Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts.
Lift your heart and I'm feeling like I'm drowning. My trigger hand, it was shaking fast as lightning. You take the high road, and I'll take the long. Oh, baby, where have the simple times gone? My, my, my. All them stars, all them falling stars, stop shining. All them hearts with all them tiny parts like clocks kept winding. You take the high road, and I'll take the long. Oh, baby, when the simple time's gone. My, 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 where the simple time's gone. My, 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 I wish there was something I could say. You missed the I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry. We came apart, we broke apart like pins were striking.
In this perfect game of life we played, we died trying. Ooh. Well, what were we supposed to do? Well, we kept on fighting. Ooh. You take the high road, and I'll take the long. Oh, baby, when the simple time's gone. My, 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 when the simple time's gone. My, 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 when the simple time's gone. My, my, my.
Rockford's very own Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts in studio. They're playing Lincoln Hall and Lincoln Park on Friday night. They got the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday night. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll take a break. And you guys want to do one more?
Sure.
All right, we'll do one more. All right, here right after the break here, Studio 435 on 720 WGN. Welcome back to Download here at Studio 435. The band Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts from Rockford, Illinois. Rockford's very own. And an album called Heavy Metal, which came out this summer. Their third LP. They're playing Lincoln Hall on Friday night here in Lincoln Park. And then they're going to the Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday. In studio, Miles Nielsen, Jeff Werkel, Fast Dave McClellan, Dan McMahon, and Adam the Dark Lord Plowman. Plowman, is that right? It's close enough. I got it. All right, here we go. Let's get one more track from them tonight. Here's the track High Street. Take it away, guys.
Having a throne issue. Jeff usually has a throne issue.
I was living on High Street, wearing my blue jeans for weeks. Life is a landmine, my eyes are a blur. I'm drowning in the drunk tank, spending most of my days reaching for the live wire that I couldn't hold. Oh, 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 we go it alone. Oh, 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 we go it alone. My eyes have gone crazy. Pay me up in whiskey. Well, I am the dead horse that you like to be. Rehearsing my dry run, biting off my tongue, predicting more blackouts and getting out of control. Oh, 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 we go it alone. Oh, 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 we go it alone. Oh, 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 we go it alone. We go it alone. We go it alone. I'm living off High Street, still wearing my blue jeans for weeks. Life hit a landslide and fell into place. Leading most of my days looking for a new way, having a field day, then you run out of steam. Oh, 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 we go it alone. 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 We go it alone.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Studio 435 here on 720 WGN. Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts from Rockford, Illinois. The album is called Heavy Metal, their third LP. They're going to be at Lincoln Park this Friday night. Lincoln Paul in Lincoln Park this Friday night. And Chicago Street Pub in Joliet on Saturday night. Guys, thank you so much for playing tonight. I appreciate you being here at Studio 435, man. Thank you, man. That'll do it for the download tonight. We got our eyes on a couple of things tonight, of course. Coming up, Adam Hogan, Mark Carmen are going to do the post-game show. Obviously, the game's still going, but they're going to take over, do a little sports, keep you up to date on what's happening with the game. We'll be all over that. We'll also be all over the Chicago teacher strike, whether or not that's happening. We're essentially into the last hour. I mean, really, I mean, there's no hyperbole here. This is it. This is a final hour.
You know how Chris Berman would do this, don't you?
How would he do it?
Tick, tick, tick. Yes, we are in the final hour.
I mean, it's amazing to me, too, because, I understand the idea that, you know, negotiations are going to go down to the wall. They're going to go down to the hour. But, I mean, for parents and kids right now, I mean, what's the deal? Like, I mean, I feel like they're, like, not represented whatsoever in this battle between the city and teachers to the idea that, Karen Lewis didn't give us any real understanding of what's going to happen here.
Oh, no, Justin, that's not true, because as the teachers will tell you, this is all for the kids.
This is for the kids.
Yeah,
right,
I mean, we're
going
to go on strike and we're going to cancel extracurricular activities, but this is for the kids.
I'm more interested in the communication. I just want to know.
Right.
You know, like for me to be off the air at 11 o'clock and there's a school day tomorrow, it's a head scratcher in the sense that, you know, I have to pay attention, I guess, to the news. And I got to watch WGN Morning News in the morning, I guess.
Hey, man, keep it locked right here.
What kind of
dog and pony show you think I'm running up here?
I will be tuning in.
I got you covered.
I'll wake up at 6 in the morning tomorrow here. My chair, still going strong.